Man is motivated in everything he does by hunger.
Popular belief has it that man is motivated by sex.
You show a starving man a beautiful woman and a pizza, what do you think he's going to choose? Make it an ugly woman and a pizza.
Stephen Gold is a medical student.
Large intestine? What part of the large intestine? The poop chute?
A bad one.
I can't fuck out.
You already have.
But on stage, he's a king of comedy.
Wonder Woman flew an invisible jet. How did she find it?
Lila Kritzik is a housewife.
Who took my gym shorts?
They're in Carrie's drawer.
A bad one.
I am good enough.
No, you're not, Lila. You're not funny.
You say that to me one more time and I'm going to leave this house.
That woman is not funny.
But she dreams of a career as a stand-up comedian.
My husband is Polish. To him, the term simultaneous orgasm means it could happen in the same room.
And the only one who can make her dream come true.
I want to learn.
Lady, it takes every night. Six clubs a night.
Is Steven.
What do you do for a living?
I'm an insurance salesman.
You're an insurance salesman?
You got that thing. People love you on stage. You know that.
You mean it?
All you need is the right gags.
Now, Lila has become the student.
He believes in me. He thinks I'm funny.
Steven has become the teacher.
Maybe I should quit. I don't know.
You can't do that.
Why not?
Because you're funny.
And these two failures have joined forces.
I just simply can't do it. It's just something.
Come on!
All right!
To take on the best comedians in New York.
What about the contest?
What contest?
At the club, where the winner gets a shot on the Carson show.
In a competition that could make the winner a star.
I love being able to make people laugh, and I want to be a comedian.
Go kill them.
Academy Award winners Tom Hanks and Sally Field.
I hope this is for a sore shoulder. With anything that has a 90-day warranty.
With John Goodman, Mark Rydell, Kim Greist, Taylor Negron, and Damon Wayans.
Is this thing on?
In a motion picture that proves dying is easy.
You're turning blue, Sam. Why is that? Oh, good God, I'm standing on his air hose.
But comedy is hard.
All right, it's not funny. Okay, so shoot me.
Punchline.
So what if you're funny? If that's all you are, so what?
A David Seltzer film.
The love of my life. It's a lady named Comedy.
You liking the juice?
You liking the juice? You know,
oh my God.
We were going to watch a fucking sequel to a talking baby movie this week, and I feel like we somehow picked a weirder movie.
Well, definitely a worse movie. Punchline from 1988. Good gravy, is this awful. Oh, also, welcome to Saturday Night Jive, where we talk about Saturday Night Live and Saturday Night Live related movies. This one featuring Mr. Damon Wayans.
And there was another SNL guy in here, wasn't there?
Well, this movie has come up twice because when we did our five-timers, we discussed doing this movie for Tom Hanks and for John Goodman. And yeah, I didn't know there was a movie that featured both of them in a love triangle with Sally Field.
And I just feel like, and you were the one that pointed out, which I wasn't thinking, Sally Field, Tom Hanks wants to fuck Sally Field in this movie. They played mother and son in a different movie.
I know. And I did not make that connection until like an hour into this movie. Tom Hanks and Sally Field seem to have like no romantic interest in each other. They seem like platonic friends, right? Was I missing on some sexual chemistry that was there?
It was definitely premature. I feel like they were building to that, but they didn't quite build to it when they pulled the trigger on, oh, clearly Tom Hanks is in love with Sally Fields now. Is it Field or Fields? I always get that wrong.
Field, singular. She's just one Field.
Okay. But yeah, no, it seemed like by the time they were like, yeah, let's get together, yeah, I did not pick up on the fact that they were supposed to be together, and obviously by the end they aren't, which maybe that's the point of that. Maybe it was always premature because she always loved John Goodman.
Maybe. But an hour into this movie, Tom Hanks kisses Sally Field, and immediately I'm like, oh, fuck, that's Forrest Gump's mommy. And it just like grossed me out for the rest of the movie. I was just like feeling so gross.
And I want to say in general, I feel like I can safely blame you for this. If we can blame me for House 4, because I was like, hey, that might be interesting. This was all you. This was like the fifth or sixth time you were like, hey, let's watch Punchline.
Well, I've always been curious to see it because it just seemed like a weird movie. Like Tom Hanks and Sally Field as stand-up comedians. I thought that'd be fun to watch. But then like maybe like 6 or 7 years ago, I don't know, 5 years ago, whatever.
However long we've been doing this fucking podcast.
This movie was on, like, TV late at night, like, on some weird fucking channel. And I was like, it was late in the morning, late at night, I was stoned, and I'm watching Punchline, and I'm like, oh shit, Damon Wayans is in this, we gotta watch it. But I don't remember anything about the movie, because like 45 minutes in, I was like, I don't know if Tom Hanks and Sally Field are gonna be like romantic in this movie, like, I don't remember if that happens or not. And then when it did, I was like, ew.
I can tell you just by the very first scene of the movie, I can understand that reaction. We have to watch this for the podcast. It starts with what is meant to appear like a drug deal, except it's not Sally Field buying drugs. She's buying jokes for $500. And they're like shitty, like Polish jokes.
So how do we do it?
$20 a pop, guaranteed fresh.
I've got to see what I'm buying. What does a Polish girl get that's long and hard when she gets married?
A last name!
Oh, you heard that one, huh?
She spends $500 for Polish jokes that the audience knows already, because then when she goes on stage and tells them, they're like, oh, and they're screaming out the punchline. Like, I wish this movie would have gotten absurd. This movie needed to be, like, crazy. I was rooting for a mafia subplot. Like, I just needed that in this movie. I needed something to happen in this movie of interest.
I love that that's come back around now. Like, that used to be the thing we complained about. Because remember, in House 4, we were like that too. Like, isn't the mafia subplot the only interesting thing in this movie? Now it's like the thing we hope for.
I know. I needed there to be some kind of thing where, like, Tom Hanks and Sally Field, they gotta go into the fucking back alleys to get her $500 back for those jokes. I just wish, like, it would have cut to, like, Sally Field sucking that dude's dick for jokes because she was short $100. I only have 400. All right, well, if you want the punchlines, you gotta line my punch, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, I was waiting for that, and that's the inspiration for the title of the movie. Sally Field sucking a dude's dick. No, but I was waiting for, like, a sexual harassment supplement when, like, she's talking about, like, struggling to get on stage, and like you think, because like there was a thing with Joey Diaz, the comic, like he admitted on Joe Rogan a while back that, like, yeah, I would have when girls suck my dick for spots, and it's like, you know, that was a thing then and it is now, and I feel like they could have, well, I guess they weren't really talking about it back then though.
No, also this movie Punchline, like, this is one of those movies kind of like Duets, where it's like, I don't understand the world that you have set this film in, because comedy, the way they depict comedy clubs in this movie is insane, right?
Well, to the point where I feel like, I don't know, like, Taylor Negron's in this, Damon Wayans, you mentioned. I don't know how many of these people are real comics and how many of them are actors portraying comics. Like, we were trying to figure that out as we were watching, because, like, some of the acts seem deliberately bad, and you have to think, well, that's not a comic doing that, like, that's not his real act, and that's not, like, or is it like just shitty, but 80s comedy was shitty, so, like, I don't know, like, it doesn't make comedy look good, but all these comics are seemingly sanctioning it.
Well, because you do see Taylor Negron and Damon Wayans, and they seem like they're doing their, like, stand-up act, but then you have the singing nun. who just sings The Name Game. Like, that's not a joke. What are people laughing at when
and
they cut to the singing nun on stage?
There's a contest where the winner gets to be on Carson. You're not letting that guy into that contest, because there's no fucking way that Carson's producers, their bookers, are going to be like, oh, wait, who won the contest? The fucking singing nun? Then this show is invalid.
We're not putting the singing nun. Well, worse than the singing nun is this fucking guy who just holds up a boombox, and then he holds the mic up to the boombox, and he's like, hey, boombox. What is that?
See, and that's, and I was thinking about Duets too, because a lot of this was, like, cringy to me, where, like, it's a trope I hate in movies, where, like there's a reaction that the context of the movie wants to elicit, which is like, these people are funny, they are making people laugh, but they're not actually funny, so I'm not laughing, so I don't believe that they're funny in the context of making other people laugh. It's like the Robin Williams thing. You always have somebody in the room to laugh at his jokes to tell me that he's funny, or he could just be fucking funny. And I was thinking, like, Duets, it works because they're, like, to the extent that it works, because they're karaoke, so they're shit to begin with. There's no level of, like, they're supposed to be impressive. Whereas in this, it's like, no, these are stand-up comics. They're supposed to be impressing me, and they're not.
Oh, yeah. Every time they cut to someone actually doing stand-up comedy in this movie, it is the most unfunny thing you've ever seen in your life. But the audience is laughing. So I don't know if I'm supposed to go, oh, this audience is insane. Because like, well, that wasn't funny what they were laughing at. Or if I'm just supposed to go, oh, I guess that's the best the movie could do to show stand-up comedy. And then they had to... And there's sometimes where they use music, like at the end when Tom Hanks's final stand-up performance in this movie, what the fuck was that? But the music is like soaring, and so I'm like, oh, okay, so I guess this is supposed to be good, but it's not. So what the fuck is going on in the film?
Well, it's a weird thing where, because like obviously I didn't look up who wrote this, but I assume that they are not a stand-up comic or have any experience of stand-up comedy. And it's a thing when you have a screenwriter trying to write what they don't know, which is why, like, we talked about that in movies where, like, every executive type person where it doesn't really matter what they do, they just have to have a high power job, they're always in, like, advertising or something where it's about pitching ideas, because that's what a screenwriter knows. They know how to pitch ideas, so they try to find something that works like that. Whereas something like this, it's obvious that, like, you don't know how stand-up comedy works, you don't know joke construction the way a stand-up comic does, and you didn't just fucking ask anybody. You know, you didn't get any, like, actual stand-up comics to, like, advise you on how this would actually work. Like, why wouldn't you hire somebody, I guess this was the 80s, like, hire fucking Jerry Seinfeld or somebody to be, like, the punch-up guy to do all the actual bits, you know? Like, to make them sound organic and credible.
Well, apparently you don't know the history of this film, but there was a comedy consultant working on this movie.
I don't believe it.
Do you know who it was?
Was it the fucking unknown comic? The guy with the fucking garbage bag on his head?
It was Mr. Barry Sobel, who you may remember from Martians Go Home.
You mean your favorite stand-up comic of the 80s?
Tom Hanks followed Barry Sobel around and, like, palled around with him to work on his character. So Tom Hanks is kind of... I'm not doing an impression of Barry Sobel, but he's taking mannerisms from him to hone his character.
Well, I thought that the take that Tom Hanks has on this character, I mean, obviously a lot of it is in the script, but the, like, the broken man shtick, which is like, you're never sure whether he's falling apart or just pretending to fall apart, and he's constantly kind of on the edge of, he's like what we think of when we think of, like, a Sam Kinison type, I guess, in terms of his offstage personality, I mean.
Yeah, I was confused by his comic persona, because this is a movie where all the comedians are shown, they have a bit. You know, you have the singing nun. You have the guy who makes, like, sound effects. You have mimes.
I hate Wilma Flintstone. I want to talk about it. I think she's a fucking bitch. I'm from right here in New York, from a large family. There's 10 kids in my family, man. That's a lot of kids, Jack. My father had stretch marks. There's a bunch of us.
I know you're all staring at me thinking, my God, look at this girl. She looks so much like Diana Ross. I can't get over it.
I'm going to do an impression of Gandhi's mother.
Sweetheart, please. Just the sandwich?
My wife bought alligator gloves. I said, what are you going to do with alligator gloves? She'll put them on. I'll tell them I got a skin condition.
Have you tried leech off? Leech off? Yes, leech off works naturally with hydrochloric acid. Just a few drops in each eye, you can kiss those leeches goodbye.
We were making love the other night. I felt he was holding back. So I said, sweetheart, we've been married for 15 years. When we make love, I don't want you to hold back. I want you to do whatever you want to do. So you know what he did? He threw up.
Like the history professor. There's a guy who's a history professor, but he's a stand-up comedian at night. But his act is he kind of acts like a history professor.
Wait, okay? You kept saying history. I didn't miss. Must have missed that part. Did they say he was actually a history professor?
He was a high school teacher or something.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't get that, but because he didn't really have an act. He didn't have, like, a gimmick. He was just a really unfunny comic because he was a really unfunny guy. At least that's what I took from it. Or was that a character he was playing?
I think it was both. Because, like, the first time they introduce him, he's like, but my students love that act. And Tom Hanks is like, oh, yeah, well, your students like it, but you're in a comedy club now. So you gotta be, like, dirty or whatever the fuck. This movie is so terrible, I forgot that whole scene existed. But well, that guy's, like, an actual school teacher.
So much of this movie, like, I kept just chalking... Anything that didn't make sense to me about the comedy world specifically, I just kept chalking it up to, well, that was comedy in the 80s. Because I know it was different. It exploded in the 80s. That's, like, the stereotype of the brick background and like, anybody could be a fucking comic. Did you ever see there's a fucking guy... He's like the robot comic. Like, he's a guy who goes on stage and pretends to be a robot.
I've seen the robot comic.
And it, like, I looked at, and I fucking flabbergasted, because, like, that shit would not fly today. You can't, everything has to be real. Even when the realness, like, I don't know if you like Anthony Jeselnik or those, like, absurdly dark comedians where it's like, I don't believe you. It's a fucking gimmick you're doing. You're trying to be Carlin or whatever. But at least, like, there needs to be some illusion of authenticity, whereas back then it's like, yeah, you can just be a weird fucking mime or have a boombox and or have the lesbian talk show, like that could be your act.
Oh, I forgot about the lesbian talk show.
But like, it was just like anything. Fuck it, put it on there, whatever. We just need. There were so many comedy clubs. It was it was like, you know, like we think of like Netflix and Hulu and all these platforms where it's just like, fuck it, we just need content. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, we can make a movie and put it on Amazon. It doesn't give a shit. You know, it's like that was what comedy was in the 80s, I feel like. Or at least that's the what it seems like it was.
Well, because yeah, let's start there. Well, first let's start, I guess, with introducing the plot of the film.
There's not much of one.
I know, but I do want to get into how this stand-up comedy club works. But the plot of Punchline is Sally Field is a housewife. She's married to John Goodman. They got three kids. But at night, she likes to be a stand-up comedian. So she goes to clubs. They never get into her backstory, really, like what inspired her to be a stand-up comedian. She's only been doing it for like 13 weeks, she says. But that's her dream, regardless. Tom Hanks is flunking out of med school, and he wants to be a stand-up comedian at night. They get together. Tom Hanks is trying to like help her with her act. At first you think it's to make money, but then no money changes hands. Then all of a sudden it's romantic out of fucking nowhere. And then Tom Hanks goes crazy because he's just in love with Sally Field. It's a weird fucking movie.
I feel like most of this podcast is just going to be that fucking Singing in the Rain scene. But yeah. I feel like, see, I don't mind the setup of it. He's the more experienced comic and he just takes a shine to her. Like, I don't, even before it gets romantic, just the idea that like he sees something in her where it's like, you know, you have potential, but you're bringing yourself down, or you're whatever the expectations or whatever it is that the reason he sees something that where she's innately funny, but she's not able to express it or articulate it. So he's going to help bring it out of her. And then from there, it turns back. That structure is fine to me. Everything wrong about this movie feels like the execution. Like right away in the first scene, I feel like they overdo John Goodman's assholishness to the point where by the end, I was like, no, he fucking doesn't deserve a redemption arc, but he gets one anyway.
Yeah, but also, like, at first I was like, oh, John Goodman's going to be the villain of this movie. He's going to be, like, the asshole husband who, like, shits on her dreams. But
he is, right at the beginning.
He is, but then I also started to think, like, yeah, what the fuck is she doing? Like, she's going to comedy clubs every night and, like, just, like, bombing. Like, what is her plan? Is she going to be a stand-up comedian? Like, is that going to be her new career or something? Or is she just doing this as a joke? Like, I think if my wife was doing that and I was home every night with three kids going like, oh, my wife's going, she 13 weeks ago she decided to become a comedian, I'd be a little pissed too 13 weeks later.
If she sucked, I guess, but like, he's never even seen her perform. I guess is that I think the implication of the last scene is that that's the first time he's ever seen her.
Yeah, she says at one point, or he asks at one point, like, well, why, that's not my fault that I've never seen you. And she's like, well, I didn't want you to, I couldn't perform if you were there. Like, I wouldn't be myself.
But she's not herself anyway. And that's, I guess that's the lesson, is you have to be yourself, like a write what you know sort of thing. She's doing the old Polish jokes that everybody knows, and so she's not being authentic. Even though nobody fucking is. That's the crazy thing. Like, would you give that advice to the mime with the hat thing? Like, no, you gotta be yourself. what the fuck does that mean for him?
I know, like, Sally Field's arc is basically to just become, like, you know, what I appreciate in a stand-up comedian. You know, like, who wants to just listen to a guy tell fucking Polish jokes on stage all night? Like, that's not funny.
I mean, unless you're like Emo Phillips, where like your delivery is a deconstruction of the old school comic or something like that. Yeah.
Right. But no, Sally Field like becomes kind of like this, trying to think of an analog. I was going to say Carlin, but like that's too big.
It's interesting. I don't know who would be the analog of like contemporary to the movie, but like the idea that like she's trying to tell dirty jokes and that's not her. That feels like the plight of a lot of modern female comics where they're expected to just be like dirty and sound like the male comics. And, you know, it's like it's a struggle. I've heard comedians talk about this. Like, it's a struggle to just be honest and not have to fall into that persona of like the dirty female comic. Like, like that's a thing. So like this is, I don't know, I'm assuming it was a thing then as well.
Maybe. I don't know. They never really get into the politics of stand-up, like, because no one's ever like really telling any of these comedians what to do. That's why I kind of want to get into how the comedy clubs run. Because it just seems like if you want to be a comedian, you could just go be a comedian. Like, this Romeo's Comedy Club will pay you $15 a night to just go up and tell jokes for 5 minutes.
Well, that's the thing, because it's not like an open mic night. So they're all established to some extent, and yet she says she's been doing it for 13 weeks. How did she get into that to the point where she has a regular spot if she sucks and everybody kind of recognizes that she's lame? Unless, is that a thing? Like, do they have lame comics specifically lined up to, I guess, maybe make the funnier ones seem funnier? Like, do they have, like, ringers, kind of? Like, they don't know their ringers?
That's why it's confusing, because Romeo is like, okay, my Chuckle Hut, it's doing great business. Everybody's slinging back drinks. We're making a lot of money. And so I guess he just needs entertainment. But instead of just throwing up Sally Field on there, who he admits sucks, like when he first introduces Sally Field, he's like, hey, this girl...
He sets up the audience and says, hey, this next comic you're going to see, you're not going to like him. She sucks.
Yeah, but like, be nice to her. And so why is he doing that? Instead of doing that, why not just let Tom Hanks do like 10 minutes of material, you know, instead of just doing a 5 minute chunk and going, all right, good night, everybody.
You know, I think I must have been looking down at the time. This scene we're watching now in the nursing or the hospital, that guy with the broken arm is a stand-up. I know. I don't know his name, but I've seen him before.
Mm. Oh, that's George Wallace.
George Wallace. And it's just like, any comic in this movie, did at any point did they tell him, like, you know, that's not what it's fucking like, right?
I bet you this was like a joke among comedians, like when this movie was being made and when it was coming out. Because I'm sure, like, probably a lot of stand-up comedians like were like Taylor Negron was probably like, hey guys, I got the Punchline movie. And then like 1988 happens, the Punchline movie comes out, and people are like, hey Taylor, great job in the Punchline movie.
Oh no, I knowing Taylor Negron as I do personally, he's one of my dearest friends. No, but just knowing, you know, what he was like when he was alive, he's passed away since. I can't imagine that every appearance he's in is ironic in this movie, that he knows exactly what it's about, and not telling them that they're doing it wrong is part of the fun for him.
I think he's having the most fun in this movie, but like in secret, because every time they cut to Taylor Negron's face, who knows what the fuck's going on in his head? At one point, it's at the end of the movie, Tom Hanks, spoiler, is winning the stand-up competition at the end. And they just cut to Taylor Negron. And I don't know if Taylor Negron's going to fuck Tom Hanks. I don't know if Taylor Negron is going to cut off Tom Hanks' face and wear it around as a mask. But it's one of those two things.
He's creating his own arc that isn't in the movie. Because, like, some characters have arcs, and you're like, the fucking old guy that didn't get in the competition suddenly has, like, a scene where he had a story the whole time. Taylor Negron doesn't even really have that, but it feels like in his head he does, and he's trying to, like, show it in every scene he's in.
Yeah, well, he's always, like, in the background of scenes, like, oh, I gotta call my manager. Oh, I gotta... It almost seems like they're setting him up as, like, an adversary for Tom Hanks at some point. Like, he's going to be the rival stand-up who, like, challenges him at the thing. But you can't really talk about any of that, because then the movie just turns into a romantic drama for some reason, and you're like, whose idea was it to make a movie about stand-up comedians and, like, so much of it intentionally not be funny?
That's the thing, intentionally not be funny. That's the thing, like when he has his breakdown in the middle of the movie with his dad in the audience. But like, I was expecting Taylor Negron to win at the end. Like that was going to be the joke, like in Duets, where like the John Panette character wins. He's like, who was that? Oh, he wasn't one of our main characters, and that's the point. I thought Taylor Negron was being set up, or the fat guy, the history professor. One of them was going to win just crazily.
I kind of wish the history professor would have won at the end. Like, I thought that would have been nice, you know? If they're like, oh, no, we just love that history professor. And then it's kind of a thing like, oh, it doesn't matter really how good you are. They just liked his gimmick more. They thought he would be a better fit for the Tonight Show. They thought he was, you know, they wanted to bring him on to laugh at him, you know?
He wins, and yeah, they're just like, oh, yeah, no, we wanted to find a bad comic for Carson to make fun of. You guys were too good.
Johnny would love this dumb piece of shit.
He looked like a Ken Bone-esque sort of character. Like, he's sort of there to be corny.
What do we talk about this?
I don't know, because like the movie's going on in fast speed in the background, and now we're at we just skipped over the scene where Flight of the Bumblebee plays as Sally Field desperately tries to fucking make dinner for her family.
I'm going to slow this down to normal speed.
Well, even as I...
We were going through too quick.
Even as I just... Well, it's a two-hour fucking movie. At multiple points, we were like, holy shit, I'm only half the way through, and I was going to suggest fast-forwarding through it, honestly. We didn't ultimately do that, but yeah, just like there are so many scenes where if you take them out of context, the dinner-making scene, the Tom Hanks goes crazy scene, the Tom Hanks breaks down on stage, like you take them out and like they all feel like different movies. Like it never coalesces into feeling like any kind of movie because everything feels different.
Yeah, there were multiple times in this movie where I was like, is this scene supposed to be funny? Like, I can't tell, because the movie's not funny on purpose. Like, for some reason, the movie about stand-up comedians is not a comedy. Like, they decided to go drama with it, which is weird. But be that as it may, like, all right, you're making a drama about the life of stand-up comedians. But then there's, like, a couple scenes where it's just like, no, they're filming this to be funny. Like, they want it to me to laugh. But this is so unfunny.
Yeah, well... The problem, because, like, there's, like, that scene I'm talking about, where she's making the food, and then it ultimately ends, and I thought it was going to end with, because she's late, and she's late because she broke her promise and went to do the comedy thing again, and I thought it was going to end with the reveal that John Goodman just took the clients out to dinner, because, like, he'd already lost faith in her ability to, you know, pay it off, and it was going to be, like, a somber moment, and instead, it's a setup for... No, he comes home, she made the dinner, and then there's a joke where the little girl says something vulgar and ruins the dinner anyway. And I guess it's implied that
she says cocksucker in front of a priest. I did like that.
But I guess it's sort of implied that that's Sally Field's fault for some reason. Like, maybe that's, like, her influence as, like, wanting to be a comic kind of... I don't know what... Because it seems like that kind of started something between them.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I think... There was a couple moments where John Goodman seemed to, like, dislike that she was a stand-up comedian because he thought it was vulgar. Like, at one point he mentions that. He's like, oh, and you're going to go, my wife is telling, you know, dirty jokes at night. Like, I think that's what upset him. But then... But
his traditional values of, like, what a wife should be and what a family should be just instantly soured me on the character. And it's like that's hovering over every scene. Every scene that might be intentionally funny has the tension of, like, is John Goodman gonna fucking beat her in the next scene? Like, or is fucking Tom Hanks gonna fucking kill himself? You know, it's like at every time, like, I'm primed to, like, oh, I could be laughing at this, but I'm not going to because I think the next scene's gonna be fucking tragic.
Yeah, there were a couple times in this movie where I was like, I think Tom Hanks is just... I think he's going through a psychotic break, but, like, I think I'm supposed to giggle?
No, that scene where he's in the rain, I literally thought, like, oh, the end of this is he's going to kill himself. It's going to be like a lot of comics have killed themselves and have had that kind of life and personality where, you know, comedy was an outlet for their darkness. They're clearly setting him up as one of those kind of characters. Is that going to be the end for him? And I kind of almost would have preferred that.
They're setting him up as he has nothing going for him. Like, at one point, he's taking a whore's bath in the back of the comedy club. Like, he's just washing his pits in the sink, in the dirty sink. And he says, like, oh, yeah, I'm selling my blood. I'm selling my semen. Like, how is this man making money. He says he's making $15 a night at the comedy club. But then later on, they establish that there's multiple comedy clubs in New York City. It seems, but he seems misguided, like he's only going to Romeo's Chuckle Hut.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess I feel like that's more like today. I think like in New York or in L.A. or wherever you are, there's like one big one and then there's a bunch of little ones. I don't think that was necessarily the case in the 80s, but I feel like when people talk about like they go to the Comedy Store and that's where everybody knows everybody, and that's, you know, I don't know what the New York equivalent. I listen to a lot of like L.A. comics, like their podcasts and stuff, and they always talk about like that one place, and they don't really talk about, unless they're on tour, that's when they go to the other places.
Yeah, but this is New York City that they're in.
I guess, like, but I don't know.
I think if you're a professional comedian, you would get paid, unless it's like an amateur night. Like, if Tom Hanks went to another comedy club and got on stage, they would pay him for his time, right?
I mean, I would
otherwise, it's just karaoke. Like, what the fuck are they doing? They're just going, like, this isn't a career, right? Like, these guys are getting, they're professional comedians, right? This isn't like duets where they're all going to the stand, they're all fledgling stand-up comedians who have just, you know, tried it one night in a bar.
Well, I think the reason you do stand-up comedy in the 80s is also different from today. Remember, this was the heyday of, like, the stand-up gets his shitty sitcom. Whereas that's, I mean, it's still a thing, but it's not as much of a thing now. Like, now people, they make their money on tour. Whereas here, you make your money by getting noticed and getting a fucking Seinfeld deal. So I think, right, like, a lot of them are hoping for that. That's what the end of the movie is. They're all hoping for that deal.
I know. It seems like stand-up comedy in this world is just like you go to a shitty nightclub that is, for some reason, filled with patrons, but you get paid $15 to tell 5 minutes of jokes, and then the end goal is you might get discovered and become a millionaire.
Well, the idea of why there are people there, that's confounded me forever, but like, comedy clubs never have any problem filling seats. That we have the fucking Funny Bone, and like, eventually, every once in a while, we'll go because there's somebody, like, we saw David Koechner there and John Lovitz, but like, most of the time it's people I've never heard of. Like, when I walk by it and see the marquee for like who's coming up, it's like random comedians, but I feel like either they have audiences or people just go there like, who, I don't know who that is, but fuck it, it's comedy.
I think some people probably do that. They're like, oh yeah, let's go out. Who's playing at the Funny Bone? Oh yeah, sure. It's stand-up comedy. Let's go see stand-up comedy. I don't know.
Like, I get it. I mean, like, I do that with movies, but when we can go out and see movies without dying, sometimes, right, I just go to the movie theater and go like, I don't care what's playing, whatever. It's something that looks interesting. Because I like movies and I like just sitting in a theater and watching a movie. I get that, but like, I don't know. I feel like movies, there's always bound to be something I'm going to kind of like. Stand-up comedy is such a crapshoot.
Yeah, especially if it's something like a fucking open mic night. Like, you're going to get people on there who, like, haven't been doing it for that long.
I feel like open mic nights are more like karaoke, where it's a lot of, like, you come because you're going and you have, like, your friends there. I don't think a lot of people go to open mic nights just like, I want to see what fresh comedy's out there.
I just happen to be a booker for The Tonight Show. Let me walk into the Chuckle Hut and see if I spot a star.
Yeah, but that's, well, I don't know. There's so much about this movie that just feels like it's wrong because they didn't do any research. And it's understandably wrong. Like it makes sense why it makes no sense. But then you get shit like the Singing in the Rain scene where it's just like, what the fuck were you doing?
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Okay, I'm going through my notes now. We talked about Sally Field buying jokes like it's cocaine. But can we talk about Tom Hanks and his stand-up act filled with Chinese voices?
Which they bring back at the end of the movie in the triumphant he's winning the day scene.
It always kills! That Chinese accent that Tom Hanks does always kills. And oh my god, yeah, the end of the movie, they're like, oh, it's his big break. He's performing. You know he's going to win the stand-up set. And he ends it with like, oh, hurrah, get in my taxi car.
It reminded me, remember in like the second episode of Community where Chevy Chase and Joel McHale do like the presentation? and it's like the montage of how racist it is. And then they cut to Chang just going like, no, F, that sucked. It's like that, but unironic. Like, yeah, like if they cut to him with like a fucking Vietnam, like, you know, bowl hat and like tape on his eyes. And then everybody's just like laughing hysterically and we're not supposed to have any problem with it.
That would have been great, yeah. If during that end montage of him doing stand-up, they just pan across and he's just like doing full-on no tiki, no Rondry.
Or just you cut to him and just full-on Al Jolson blackface. And everybody's just like, oh my god, no one has deserved a slot on Carson Moore.
Oh my god, because that's the weirdest fucking thing, too, is that Tom Hanks is doing this fucking racist Chinese act on stage. And that's what sparks Sally Field's attention in him. She's like, oh my god, he's all these racist jokes he's doing. I just have to stand here and look at him in awe.
Oh no, it's the thing that inspires her to go like, I need him to be my mentor. I need him to teach me what he knows.
Right. This guy has the answers. He has unlocked the secret to stand-up comedy. Meanwhile, Tom Hanks is like, oh, hurrah!
And it keeps going on in the background. Like, they'll have other scenes, and you hear him, and, like, it's such a long bit that they cut away to something else, and then they cut back to him doing it.
That was terrible. Yeah, and then, yeah, I don't have any other notes until the scene we're watching now, really. Nothing really of interest, because this movie's uninteresting. So Tom Hanks has flunked out of medical school, but he hasn't told his father. We also get little hints of, like, his roommates are covering for him, which I didn't make this leap. You had to point this out to me while we were watching it, because I was confused. But, like, I guess his roommates have been covering for him, so, like, if his dad calls, they will pretend to be the school and say like, oh yeah, Tom Hanks is in class now, but I'll leave you the message. But then Tom Hanks is like, oh, there's going to be a scout for like some network or something at the club tonight. I got to do really good in my stand-up act. But then he looks out in the crowd and they never say it's his dad, do they?
No, like, it never outright comes back. Like that's the obvious implication. And I mean, you can't come away with any other interpretation after by the end of the scene, but yeah, it's never stated. Like, he never says like, oh my god, that's my dad.
Right, it's poorly done because he's going up to the stage and Romeo's like, okay buddy, you're gonna do great tonight, the network scouts are in the audience, you're gonna have a great show. And Tom Hanks is like, okay yeah, oh, which table are they at? And he goes, oh, it's the gray-haired guy over at table 3. And then he looks at the gray-haired guy and he just like sinks. And in that moment I was like, oh, is that his dad? But that didn't make sense. Like, no, it couldn't be his dad. Why is his dad posing as a network scout? So they never get into the fact, why did Romeo, the club owner, think that his dad was a network scout?
Well, the thing is, I don't think Romeo
doing this
knew who it was. I think he just assumed it was that guy, maybe?
Oh, he just saw a gray-haired guy in a suit and was like, this guy must be a network scout?
I don't know, because, well, I was reminded of, speaking of the thing we talked about for 10 fucking weeks, Twin Peaks. There's a subplot where, like, Norma is worried about an anonymous critic and nobody knows what it looks like. And then at the same time, her mom is in town. And the twist is her mom is the critic. And it's like, how the fuck did you not know? And it reminded me of that. Like, I thought that was going to be the twist. And like, yeah, I've been a talent scout this whole time, son, and you never knew. Like, that's how dumb this movie is that I thought that was going to be plausible.
I thought that as well. I was like, oh, his dad's a talent scout? But wait, I thought they said his dad was a doctor. Oh, I guess he can be two things. But, you know, it makes no sense. The only logical explanation I can think of is his dad called the comedy club and said, hey, I want front row tickets. And they were like, no. And he's like, well, I'm a talent scout. And they're like, okay.
Well, that seems like a weird leap. I feel like it's more... He didn't seem like the type of guy who would be at a comedy club, so the Romeo just made the assumption, I'm pretty sure it's that guy.
Oh, okay. Or maybe it's a misunderstanding, like someone told Romeo there was going to be a talent scout there, like a waiting for Guffman situation. The talent scout didn't show up, but they thought this guy was the talent scout, but then it turns out that's also the night that Tom Hanks' dad shows up out of nowhere.
Yeah, again, all of this stuff could have been settled with a very easy explanation that the movie doesn't bother to give, so it leaves us to figure out the weird fucking, it's like, you know, again, going back to David Lynch, where like you make a thing and then you take out all the clues that make it make sense, so you have to figure it out for yourself.
Punchline is not a David Lynch film.
Sorry, I've got David Lynch on the brain still.
Punchline is just a shitty movie from the 80s.
Really? Because the scene I'm watching right now with the mime looks like right out of a fucking David Lynch movie.
It's true. There are, well, also, so what happens when his dad, Tom Hanks' dad, goes to the talent show and Tom Hanks like sees him and like just collapses. He has like a nervous breakdown on stage basically, and he starts crying. At the end, he's like, somebody help me, because he's like basically pouring his heart out to his dad that he never wanted to be a doctor. So he's falling apart. And then right after that, this guy with a big boombox shows up and he's like, hey, everybody, look at my boombox. Like, that's what Romeo decided to throw out to help perk up the audience.
I can't believe that the movie is self-aware enough to understand why that's funny. Or is that a deliberate joke of how bad that is, that that's what comes after? Or is that just like they put on another comic and that was the one they had?
I guess they were just like, throw the next comic out. But like, they could have made that, interesting somehow, because the audience isn't even really reacting oddly. They're just like, oh, I guess this is this comedian's act. This is the comedian that cries. We've already seen the singing nun. We've already seen the guy who makes fart noises. This just must be the crying comedian. How interesting. Like, they're giving him the time of day.
And I would feel like now, this is a thing that could work as like an avant-garde comedy set, like a comedian that falls apart on stage. The guy, Tim from Tim and Eric, has done something sort of like this basically on purpose. Like, he's a comedian that like is just really shitty and, you know, doesn't even know how the mic works, and like he's done that on stage. You know, I feel like you could kind of do this bit as a bit and it would work.
I don't know. Because there still needs to be something funny when you're doing that, even, or you at least have to let the audience kind of in on the joke, you know?
I guess, but I feel like in the wake of like Andy Kaufman shit, you know, and what he wrought on comedy, do you even have to let the audience in on it?
I don't know. Yeah, what would you think if you were in the audience and Tom Hanks just did that? Like, he went on stage, his lead up was, this guy is a comedian, he's great, you're gonna love him, he's so funny. And then this guy shows up and he's like, oh my god, dad, you never loved me and I don't want to be a doctor. When I was in med school, a frog's eye popped out and it made me cry, and I hate being a doctor and I hate you. What would you think? Would you be
you
like,
know,
oh, huh?
I think I would find it hilarious, honestly, the way you describe it just then. Like, just the fact, like, I mean, it would be awkward, but if I thought through the whole thing that it was a bit and I didn't think it was a man actually falling apart, I would appreciate the weirdness of it and actually, like, think I would laugh at it.
I know. Well, I think that would have been an interesting way to go. If, like, you know, he's in the guise of telling jokes. Everyone thinks he's telling jokes, but he's really pouring his heart out. Because there is some, like, nervous laughter at the beginning. And then I guess, like, they just stop laughing until the guy with the boombox comes out and brings the house down. But yeah, I would think it would be a bit, and I would probably really enjoy it.
I want to see the version of this that's, like, crossed with, like, Florence Foster Jenkins, where it's, like, a comedian that sucks but doesn't know they suck, and everybody recognizes that they suck, but that's what they find funny, so it's just, like, she succeeds in spite of her sucking.
Yeah.
Like, that, I think that would have been a much more interesting story if, like, the crux of it is, like, you suck, but you're successful anyway, and, like, how do we tell you, and are we just jealous because you're more successful than us now, and, you know, kind of exploring that angle that, like, you don't have to be funny to be successful in comedy.
That's it. That's why I wanted the history professor to win at the end. I wanted them to give the award to the worst stand-up comedian.
But how do you tell? Because when the ones that are supposed to be funny are trying to be funny, they're also not funny.
I know. That's just where this movie kind of loses me, because, yeah, Tom Hanks will tell a bad joke and we're, as the audience, are supposed to go, oh, he's a funny comedian. But then somebody else tells a bad joke and we're like, oh, what am I supposed to think now? Is that a bad joke or is that a good joke? This isn't the hero of the movie, so can we get into the old guy?
And it's weird too, because like I feel like it only works in comedy or stuff like that. Like the musical equivalent of this, like That Thing You Do. They needed to ensure that that song was legitimately great, independent of the movie. Otherwise, the movie wouldn't work. The idea that everybody loves this new song, That Thing You Do, wouldn't make any sense. Like, that movie wouldn't have any credibility if the song sucked. Whereas this movie, like, it didn't seem to matter that the jokes weren't funny. They went ahead anyway.
Right. Oh, my God. Well, because we got to talk about Tom Hanks screaming about debutantes. That's the act that gets him the Tonight Show at the end, is him just going, I don't like debutantes.
Yeah, so much of that. Or Table Man. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Hey, I'm Table Man. And everyone's like, oh, my God.
See, and that's the thing where if he had killed himself in the end, if there was a little bit more of this movie, I don't want there to be a little more. So there's already too much of this movie. But, like, if he'd won, but he knew he didn't really win. He knew Sally Field won, but she didn't take the award. So he was second best, and he didn't even try. And he tried to bomb. I think that was the implication of him insulting the judges in the beginning.
That's what I thought, too.
And I think the fact that he wins anyway, but it's hollow, and then you find out right after that he kills himself, I think that would have actually made that ending matter, made it more poignant. But no, it's just he wins, and that's the end.
Yeah, no, that would have been good if... Yeah, so, spoiler alert for the end of the movie, but there's a stand-up competition. Sally Field wins, but she quits to go back with John Goodman, so they give it to Tom Hanks, who came in second place. But yeah, if Tom Hanks killed himself, and then they're just like... I guess it's Taylor Negron's
Taylor
now.
Taylor Negron at the very end. Like, I won, and I don't care how.
And then we just got to the Taylor Negron show in its seventh season on ABC.
Oh, man.
Where it's Taylor Negron racing a bunch of children.
That's how I would have definitely ended this movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this movie's terrible. But, yeah, can we talk about the old guy? Because...
it comes out of nowhere. Like, he's just a guy who has this really shitty... like, he's singing, and it's not a funny song, it's just a song. And then he's like, and then my first love is comedy. Lady comedy, or whatever the fuck he says. And then all of a sudden at the end, it's like, oh, he wanted to be on stage. Like, you should fucking know that you're not for this contest. That shouldn't be a surprise to you, old man.
But why not? Because, okay, here's what happened. The old man is just, like, at this comedy club. And, yeah, he's kind of treated like the Milton Berle. Like, he's just, like, the old guy who performs. And then when they're doing the stand-up comedy set, when Romeo's doing the lineup, he's like, all right, so you're going to be on first, you're going to be on second, you're going to be on third. And then the old guy shows up and he's like, hey, I didn't get a number. And he's like, oh, didn't you know, like, you weren't going to be on the lineup? Like, no, you didn't. This is for, like, new comics. This is to get on The Tonight Show. You're like a fucking 90-year-old comedian who sings a sappy song. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense that he wouldn't be included. But then the people who were included, the singing nun is just going, Jesus, Jesus, Bobesus, Banana Fana, Fofesus. Why can't the old man get on for 5 minutes?
Well, that's the thing. He sucks just like everybody else sucks, but in the context of the movie, he sucks worse. Right. We can't tell that
he's because
everybody because sucks.
He's old.
That's the problem here is that, yeah, you can't tell the reality of the movie and the reality of what we know of comedy outside of the movie is so out of sync that I can't ascertain any verisimilitude. I can't ascertain anything that can ground the movie in any sort of reality that I recognize.
Yeah, it's not like when you're watching like Hoosiers and you see a guy make a basket, you're like, oh, he made a basket. That's a good thing. But when you see Tom Hanks tell a bad joke and the audience laughs, you're like, oh, I guess he made the audience laugh. But it would be like if in Hoosiers, the guy misses the basket and everyone's like, hooray! You would be confused by that.
No, definitely. But I feel like we've gone on long enough. We have to talk about the fucking Singing in the Rain scene.
Oh, yes. Was there anything else I wanted to talk? Oh, yeah, because that is the... an hour into this movie, Tom Hanks plants a kiss on Sally Field. They haven't been romantically involved at all. It's gross. And then when you're like, oh, fuck, Forrest Gump's fucking his mom. That's even worse gross. But then what makes it even fucking weirder is that Sally Field's like, oh, no, I can't, like, have a relationship with you. I'm married with kids. And then she even, like, she changes her hair for some reason. And then we have a scene where John Goodman is, like, encouraging her and almost being, like, over-the-top nice to make him a good-looking guy. And then we go to Sally Field and Tom Hanks in a diner where he is going full-on fucking psycho.
Well, and in a regular movie that made sense, I think this is the scene that reveals that he is not right for her, and any kind of romantic tension or romantic chemistry that we were maybe seeing in this relationship is misguided. And like just that scene where like John Goodman knows to say, no, your hair looks beautiful and I like it. And he immediately makes a crack about it and like says, nah, your hair looks like shit. And then proceeds to fucking go insane. But I don't know that the movie knows that. I don't know that the movie doesn't think that this is like charming and tragic. Like we're supposed to feel bad that they're not getting together in this moment.
I think we are supposed to feel... I can't finish that sentence. I don't know what we're supposed to feel in this moment.
Well, I think what the actual visual language of the movie unintentionally is making us feel is, oh, he or she dodged a bullet. We thought John Goodman was a bad husband because he didn't support her, but now we've seen that maybe he's misunderstood. And we thought he was the charming rogue that would sweep her off her feet, but no, he's secretly fucking crazy and weird. But I don't think the people making the movie think that's what's happening. I think the people making the movie think that... Oh, just tragic circumstances mean they can't get together, that they're not meant for each other. But it's sad, and we should... If life were perfect, she would leave her husband and go with Tom Hanks.
Right. It's weird because, yeah, we're not... The way Tom Hanks is acting in this scene, he should become the villain of the movie, right? Like, Sally Field should be like, oh, you're a crazy person. Oh, I'm sorry. Because Tom Hanks... You know, they didn't have a romantic relationship at all. Tom Hanks kisses her in the taxi cab. He's flunked out of med school. He had that, like, psychotic break on stage. And now he's in a diner like, oh, no, I'm really funny. Like, here's some kid jokes. Your kids will love me. I'll adopt your kids. We'll get married. You should leave your husband. He's a total asshole. Like, marry me, and we'll be happy together for the rest of our lives.
And leave your husband and live with me. I don't have a house right now. I live on the streets and take horse baths at the club and do comedy sets just on the street corner for no one.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that. At one point, Tom Hanks is doing stand-up comedy at a bus stop.
If this were legitimately the story of a stand-up comic falling apart and descending into suicide and drugs or whatever, I think that would have been... Like, if this were the Jim Belushi biopic, it would be interesting. Rather than the one we actually got, which sucked, where he's talking to angels and shit.
Did you just fucking say Jim Belushi?
Did I?
When you were talking about the John Belushi biopic Wired?
The Jim Belushi biopic according to Jim, where he descends into drug use and suicide.
I thought you were pitching a Jim Belushi biopic where that happens.
No, I was talking about Wired, and once again, I fucking said Jim Belushi. I will never not say Jim Belushi when I mean to say John Belushi, because I'm talking... I want to talk about the superior Belushi so much, you know? It's just always on my tongue.
It shouldn't confuse me anymore. Like, when you say Jim Belushi, I should just jump to, oh, he means John Belushi.
Look... I think we've established that John Belushi is the inferior Belushi to Jim Belushi, right?
We're a pro Jim Belushi podcast.
And I mean, we're not quite an anti John Belushi podcast, but I feel like every instance of John Belushi we've gotten, we've been like, he's kind of overrated.
Yeah, we're an apathetic John Belushi podcast.
So I the fact that I'm always thinking of Jim Belushi, it makes sense. Who isn't?
Yeah. But no, because the movie goes to, like, drama, you know? Like, it's not a fucking comedy. It's a drama. So why didn't they just, like, you know, go full throttle at that moment and be like, oh, no, Tom Hanks needs, like, fucking help. But they don't. Sally Field is like, oh, maybe he is a good guy. I don't know. Like, he's spouting all this shit like he wants to marry me and adopt my children and leave my family, even though he's only known me for, like a week. So yeah, I think he's just crazy and needs some help. And then the rest of the movie could be about Tom Hanks, like, getting his fucking act together or something. But no, they treat it like it's cute, I think.
Yeah, this whole bit, it definitely looks like a man falling apart, where he's at the window and he just chucks his hat at her like, fuck you! And then, like, he's going in the street. I was half expecting him to get hit by a car. And, like, he'd go in a hospital bed and going like, I went too far and I need to clean up my act or some shit, or die. You know, any of that would have worked better than... Because he does kind of become the villain. Like, when he's, like, outside the club and he's yelling at people and I
didn't get what that was.
I don't know what his character is after this. I don't know what he's supposed to be. I don't know what we're supposed to feel about it. It's not clear, and I don't know if it's like if it's being ambiguous on purpose or if it's just badly written. I'm assuming the latter.
I think it's just poor filmmaking. But I think maybe they wanted like this to be a comedic bit, you know? I'm thinking maybe they were like, oh, this movie about comedy isn't funny. Let's have Tom Hanks dance in the street.
See, because I feel
it's not
like,
played for comedy, so I don't know. It's bad.
I feel like this scene and the one where he breaks down in the club are what Tom Hanks saw in this movie when he read the script. Like, this could be like a dramatic, you know, powerhouse performance. I think those were the two scenes that he pulled out and said, like, this is what the movie is for me and for my character. Yeah. You know, so like they're the ones that have the most focus, I think. And yeah, neither of them really fit in the movie otherwise.
Yeah. And it's also just, I mean, from the word go, casting Tom Hanks and Sally Field in this movie is just bad. Like, they should have just cast real stand-up comedians. But I can't really say that, because then they cast, who are they going to cast? Taylor Negron?
They were going to cast Sobel and Paula Poundstone.
It was going to be Barry Sobel and Elaine Boozler.
But yeah,
in an Elaine Boozler film, Punchline,
honestly,
opening in July.
I feel like they missed an opportunity by not focusing more on the contest at the end. Like, I think it would have been more interesting if, like, that was the thing from the beginning. Like, if this were a movie about, like, Last Comic Standing and, like, the competition and the backstabbing and, you know, like, that seems like story material there. But that's just, like, a third act thing, and it barely enters into it. Like, the ending of the movie where they're all siding together, like, that feels like the ending of a movie we didn't get.
Yeah. No, if the movie was more about... The movie needed to be more about about stand-up comedy, you know? It needed to be told in that... You know, it needed to be told in the clubs, not in John Goodman and Sally Field's kitchen, you know? They needed to cut all of that shit out.
Ironically enough, as much shit as we gave Duets, that has the better structure where it's multiple stories in this world rather than just one, you know, continuous story.
And I will argue Duets, way better movie.
I think I enjoyed it much more. I mean, Paul Giamatti's performance alone is better than anything in this movie.
That movie's shit, but it's crazy shit. This movie's just shit, and it's just like, what the f... Has anyone ever seen a comedy act?
Well, like, I think I cared more about the characters in Duets. I didn't care about them in general, but, like, I was more invested in their story and where it would end up, at least some of them, than I was anybody in this movie.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, going back to the old guy who doesn't get a spot, he has, like, a fake heart attack, like, near the end of the movie for no reason. Like, no stakes, nothing. It's just, it's like fake stakes, because Sally Field goes down in the dressing room, sees the old guy, and he's just, like, you know, he looks, like, defeated, he's all sad, he looks like he's dying, and then she goes up to Tom Hanks, who was in med school, so she's like, oh, I'm reaching out to you as someone who can help this man. Tom Hanks goes down and starts acting like a doctor, but, like, I thought maybe that was going to be Tom Hanks going, hey, maybe I should be a doctor, I can help people or something, but no, they just, like, they needed to fill time in an already 2-hour movie.
Well, and I suspected, and I don't know if this is true or not, because in that moment, he's, like, using his medical skills, and I wonder if, like, that was the whole reason he was a med student. Like, because he could have been anything. Like, he could have been a banker or whatever. But, like, to justify that, where, like, his medical knowledge goes into this, like, maybe that was a bigger part of an earlier draft, and, like, that, like, they worked backwards from there. Like, oh, yeah, he was in medical school, and that's why he knows this stuff, how to take care of a guy who has a heart attack. Like, that was going to be a bigger thing in the end.
And then I was thinking that too, but, like, his medical knowledge doesn't really come into play in that scene. He's just like, oh, you're not having a heart attack. And he's like, yeah, I could have told you that. I'm just sad. You know, I used to have a big career. I was on the Ed Sullivan Show. And they're like, oh, okay. So you weren't having a heart attack. You were just sad, old man.
Yeah.
Bye. We'll never see you again. Until, for some reason, you sing over the end credits.
And it's just, so much is just, like, I would call it aborted potential, where it's like threads that go nowhere, but it's not like they had the potential to be anything interesting anyway. So it's like the potential for potential that was thwarted.
Yeah. I mean, this movie was, like, bad, but, like, at the beginning, when it first started, I was like, oh, I can see, like, a good movie here. But then, man, first off, it's 2 hours long, and then about 45 minutes in, I was like, oh, no, there ain't no help. This movie's jumping off the fucking cliff. Apologies if you hear the beeping in the background. There's a truck backing up.
Oh, I had a mower in the background of mine. I don't know if you heard that. But yeah, but that's
I think the truck is backing up into my fucking house. It keeps getting closer and closer. At first I was like, oh, that truck backing up is just a little annoying. But now I'm like, where the fuck are you going, truck? I live in an apartment complex. I'm not in the goddamn city.
I feel like the beeping isn't going to help if it crashes into your house. That's not going to notify you of anything.
Well, it's a good thing they warned me. So I'm just sitting here in rubble.
Oh, but no, this, yeah, well, I mean, it's more interesting than anything we're talking about. Because the rest of the movie...
Truck backing up! Truck backing up!
Which, truck backing up, or a guy making truck backing up sounds, could have been an act in this fucking movie. That's how credible the fucking stand-up is. If you have boombox guy and lesbian talk show guy, I feel like if I just walked up on stage and went, beep, 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 like, people would give me a fucking standing ovation. Oh my god, get him on the fucking Carson show! He makes beeping noises! These are the comics of the future!
That's what I wanted this movie to be more of, you know? I wanted more of the stand-up comedians. Instead of having so many scenes with Sally Field and John Goodman, give me one scene where Sally Field is just palling around with Taylor Negron, you know? And they're talking about what they think stand-up comedy's like.
Or just have, like, one of the gimmicks realize his gimmick sucks. Like, the nun guy. Like, halfway through his act, yeah. He's like, fuck, I'm sorry, guys, this is lame. And, like, he takes off the habit, and he's like, this is who I am. And let me just tell you some jokes, because I fucking hate myself. I've never thought I was funny. That's why I put on a nun suit, because at least it's funny that a fat guy's dressed as a nun. But let me be honest. And then, like, he gets a moment where, like, they laugh at him for him and not for his stupid gimmick.
Right. If he goes through the fucking psychotic break instead of Tom Hanks, that would have been more interesting. Yeah, I have nothing else to say about this goddamn fucking movie.
Because it just ends with a couple of stand-up acts, and I don't even understand really why Sally Field left at the end. She could have accepted the award and then went home with her family.
Because at the end, Romeo comes downstairs and he's like, okay, everybody, great sets. You're going to go up. We're all going to go up on stage and they're going to announce the winners. And they're all like, well, come on. We all know Tom Hanks won. Like, why do we have to go up on stage just to hear Tom Hanks won? And he's like, well, Tom Hanks didn't win. Sally Field won. Now everybody go up on stage and be embarrassed that Sally Field beat you. But then she got a note from John Goodman that says, like, our contest is over. You've already won. And I think that was enough for her. Maybe she realizes in that moment that she wants that life rather than...
But that the whole point of that is, I feel like John Goodman would want her to be on Carson.
Wouldn't he?
Because he's accepted her comic life.
Exactly. No, it makes no real sense from, like, you know, a human point of view, because John Goodman finally sees his wife on stage. This, you know, career that he's been belittling for 13 weeks or however long it is now, he's like, this stand-up comedy thing, this is stupid what you're doing. He sees her, she succeeds, and then she's like, guess what? I can be on Johnny Carson, but instead I quit.
But that's the thing too. She doesn't say that. He goes like, oh, you lost? And she's like, no, I won. And then they go home with presumably him fully expecting to, like, get, like, the thing, like, the next day Carson's gonna call. And then she's got to explain to him, like, no, I won, but then I left, and they gave it to somebody else. And, like, he's going to be like, what the fuck? Why am I supporting you then? If you gave up, after I supported you, not when I was telling you to give up, but afterwards? Fuck you. Like, that would be a bigger betrayal to me.
That's a good point. Yeah, she doesn't tell him. She just says she won, and they walk away. But, yeah, now she has to explain, oh, that guy you thought I was fucking? I gave the spot to him.
Oh, yeah. But I swear I'm not fucking him, but I gave him the thing I valued more than anything.
Well, and that's the other part of this movie. The movie's 2 hours long. Guess what we're missing? Any reason why Sally Field is doing this. They never get into that at all. she just woke up one morning and she's like, I'm a mother with three kids, but I want to be a stand-up comedian, I guess, because nothing ever... She seems to have, like, no sense of humor. Her husband is like, you're not funny. Her kids are like, you're not funny. She goes on stage and she's not fucking funny. She's buying Polish jokes for $500.
And it's like,
why is she even fucking doing this?
There's one moment where she says, like, I've always made people laugh and you know, like in her own life and that made her feel good. And like, that's all it is. Like, and I guess that's all it has to be. But for a movie, I feel like, yeah, you need something more to buttress that.
Yeah. Well, and then like, is she trying to make this her career? Because obviously she's not, if she's going to turn away the Carson gig she won at the end. And if so, why is she doing this? Just to have her husband respect her? Like,
I mean, I guess it's enough.
Is that the whole point?
It's enough that she proved that she could do it. So it was proving that she was funny and that she was, you know, a real comic, and then that's enough, and then she can go back to her family. I guess that's what the movie's trying to say. I don't think I buy it, based on who she is and everything, and based on everything that came before it. But that's, I think, the... I don't know, because that lesson seems fucking trite to me. Like, all she needed was the recognition, and now she can go back to being a housewife. Like, that's like Mulan turning down the fucking position right in the council at the end of the movie. It's like, yeah, I get what you're trying to say, but it's still fucked up and wrong.
Yeah, she's going to be, like, cleaning the fucking toilet tomorrow and be like,
I could have been
wait
on
a minute,
Carson.
I could have been on fucking Johnny Carson. But no, I'll just keep cleaning this toilet.
Yeah, I don't know.
This is just as good, right, dreams?
My dream was to be just like the singing nun guy.
Oh my god, yeah, that... Fuck that guy. I forgot about the lesbian talk show bit, too. That was ridiculous. Like, what the fuck is stand-up comedy? If I had no idea what stand-up comedy was, but you showed me this movie, I would be like... Why would anyone go see this? Why would anyone do this? This is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen.
If you're Martian Barry Sobel from Martians Go Home and you come to Earth wanting to know what comedy is.
It's all fucking Barry Sobel's fault. Fucking Barry Sobel. All right.
Yeah.
He's also the comedian. Did you see Barry Sobel in the movie?
No, I don't remember. Where was he?
He was the big comedian at the end of the movie. Who I guess they were like, oh, and Robin
Greene
is here,
too. Oh, is he the
guy
that comes out of the car? Yeah, okay. I didn't notice that was Barry Sobel.
Yeah.
I don't recognize Barry Sobel when he comes on screen.
No, and then Romeo is like, yeah, this guy, he made his start here. So I guess he's supposed to be like a, you know, the pinnacle of, you know, success as a stand-up comedian is Barry Sobel.
Well, he's like the Jerry Seinfeld. Like, if Jerry Seinfeld came back to the comedy club as a judge... Yeah. Well, I guess this was pre-Seinfeld, wasn't it?
Yeah, this was like... Yeah, you said this was the era of comedians getting talk shows. This was like... I guess Cosby was on.
Maybe this
was just
before
that. But Cosby
was
already like...
I feel like that. Maybe that's more the 90s then rather than the 80s. I just think of the 80s as like the heyday of shitty comedy but that was successful, but we look back on it now and it was really shitty.
Yeah, because, like, Roseanne started... This was before Roseanne, this is before Home Improvement, before Seinfeld, before all those... Yeah, every stand-up comedian can get a show. There's Barry Sobel.
But yeah, that was, like... I guess that, for a while, that became the target. It wasn't, like... It was... Comedians would criticize those kind of comedians who would, like... They were clearly just trying to get a sitcom. But I guess, yeah, that might have been a little after this.
Yeah, that's why, like, my biggest question with this movie is, what is stand-up comedy? Is it a job? Is it a hobby? Is it a contest?
Well, the movie clearly doesn't know what it is. That's the thing.
Yeah. I was so thinking about duets while I was watching this, because, like, after watching duets, I was like, what is karaoke?
But at the same time...
And after watching this, I'm like, what is comedy?
I don't feel like... I feel like duets kind of understood what... It was. I mean, there's stuff about duets, like the fucking he's trying to like roll people like he's making bets and shit. But like as far as the lameness of it, I feel like that movie understood that karaoke wasn't not lame. Whereas I don't know what this movie thinks stand-up comedy is.
Nah, I think you're misremembering. Duets did the same thing, like. Paul Giamatti would sing a song and people would be like, oh, fuck, give him a Grammy. No, he's just singing in a karaoke bar.
I don't know. Maybe I was going to say maybe I should watch Duets again. I will never fucking watch Duets again.
We should watch Duets again.
No, we should watch Coyote Ugly again for the Lost podcast, because John Goodman basically plays the same character, only with father and daughter instead of husband and wife.
That's true. One of the Lost podcasts, Coyote Ugly.
I hate what you're doing until I see it for the first time, and then I love, then I recognize and acknowledge you. That's basically the role he plays in every movie.
That's true. He does have that arc. All right, so now let's get into any final words on Punchline.
It sucks. Don't watch it.
Don't watch it. So now let's get into my favorite part of the show.
This movie where you
were
going
to... Let's pick a movie that we won't watch next week, and then we'll watch something else. Let's spend 30 minutes picking a movie we won't be able to watch.
For the record, we couldn't... Well, you couldn't find Look Who's Talking To, and I didn't bother looking because I was like, do I really want to watch it? No, I don't.
I couldn't find it. I wanted to watch Look Who's Talking To. That would have... In hindsight, that would have been way better than Punchline. So I have rolled 51, which is Vanessa Bayer.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I don't think she's in anything interesting that we could watch. And I don't really feel like watching this episode from her tenure. All right, Vanessa Bayer's a pass. All right, next number.
Let's fucking see how the sausage is made.
124. I like this part of the podcast. Rob Schneider, there we go.
Oh,
now we got something.
Oh, why did they never make Making Copies Guy the movie?
Look at the fucking picture on Rob Schneider's Wikipedia. Doesn't that make you want to fucking punch him in the face?
Oh, it's minimized.
I thought you were looking at my screen. He's in Martians Go Home. He's in Necessary Roughness.
We already fucking watched Martians Go Home. We don't
we
need
did?
To watch it again. Didn't we?
Home Alone 2, yes we did.
I was going to say, am I fucking insane? Yes, we fucking watched that.
Necessary Roughness, starring our good friend Sinbad.
Keep going.
And
keep
Kathy
fucking,
Island.
I don't give a shit. Keep going.
Surf Ninjas?
I will watch myself some Surf Ninjas. That's
surf
a possibility.
Ninjas? Beverly Hillbillies?
That's also a possibility. That is famously the movie that you went to see because you were too afraid to see Nightmare Before Christmas in theaters.
That is true. Muppets from Space? You know what? Maybe.
I mean...
Keep it in the mix.
It's a bad Muppet movie, and we both love the Muppets, so that might just be interesting to watch. I don't think I've ever seen it. I maybe saw it when I was a kid, but...
Let's see. And then his starring vehicles, we got The Animal.
See, that's the thing. I don't want to watch any
the
of like, the Sandler-ish ones.
But I could watch... I've never seen Surf Ninjas.
I mean, it's a Three Ninjas clone where I believe Leslie Nielsen plays a samurai bad guy.
I could watch that. I could watch the Beverly Hillbillies for the first time since I saw it in the theaters because I was too afraid to watch Jurassic Park.
It was Jurassic Park. I thought it was Night Before Christmas.
No, you and Mom went and saw Jurassic Park and Dad took me to see the Beverly Hillbillies and I don't think he's ever forgiven me for it.
It's like, because Jurassic Park is one of the greatest movies ever made, and to see it in theaters, like, that was an experience I will treasure forever, and you're sitting there watching the fucking Beverly Hillbillies.
I'm watching Beverly Hillbillies. Judge Dredd, I've never seen.
Really? That's actually a good, like a solid, I mean, it's a B movie, but it's really a fun B movie. I would put it with Demolition Man as like that kind of fun.
Alright, so I think it's down between Beverly Hillbillies and Surf Ninjas. What would be your pick? Since I did, Punchline is definitely my fault.
Honestly, I want to, because Beverly Hillbillies has the personal connection, I want to leave this to you. Surf Ninjas, I think, seems like a movie that would be interesting, but has the potential to just be a really bad 90s movie. Beverly Hills Ninja, I feel like we at least have the personal connection where that will add more to the conversation. I feel like there's plus and minus either way.
Okay, so next week we will be either watching Surf Ninjas, starring Rob Schneider, which is a movie I always wanted to watch when I was a kid, but like even when I was a kid, I was like, this is gonna suck.
I
like,
think I might have seen
no
part
way.
Of it on TV at one point, but yeah, I've never actually seen the whole movie.
I was like, I was an SNL fan, so I was like, oh, it's got Rob Schneider. I was a Naked Gun fan. I was like, oh, it's got Leslie Nielsen. But like, I think even like 10-year-old me was like, dude, stay away from fucking Surf Ninjas. That's going to ruin your childhood.
Well, I feel like let's like watch like the first 5 minutes of each and see what seems like it has more potential. All right.
Yeah, or a movie that did ruin my childhood, The Beverly Hillbillies.
And I've never seen The Beverly Hillbillies. I'd be very curious to watch it with your perspective of having seen it as a child.
Oh, yeah. I would have been 11 years old when I saw The Beverly Hillbillies, and even I knew this movie sucked. I was like, this fucking piece of shit.
Why don't we watch...
I'm 11 years old, and this sucks.
We start watching it, and if we don't like it, we can just turn on Jurassic Park.
That's a good idea. Alright, so it'll be Rob Schneider next week.
Alright.
Till we see you next week. Get off the shit.
I'm a stand-up comic. Well, that's my line. And I'd like to know your zodiac. 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 Zodiac sign. I like to rock the house. I'd even do the mouse. But don't waste my time trying to figure this out. See, I'm from New York City with the hustle and the bustle. And I got better rhymes than... Nipsey Russell, bet on his, yo, pause for some applause, bet on HBO, Def on the Johnny Carson show, I even busted out live at the Apollo.
Say what?
The Barry Sobel girls, Yolanda, Dee, and some girl we found hanging out with Charlie Sexton. You see...